You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are with me today on Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4-BREAD-4. You can text, you can call, you can email me at dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. Check out our podcast, our archives at breadboxmedia.podbean.com. And this week is the Rosary giveaway, but a true giveaway. There's no contest. If you want one, I want to treat you to a rosary from Rugged Rosaries. And only because I like them. They don't support me, and I don't support them other than by saying I love them. I really do. I like they're made with they're just beautiful. They're beautiful. Yesterday's podcast has a link, I hope, to Rugged Rosaries, and you can get a discount by just putting in Dr. Michelle, all spelled caps, no periods, just DrMichelle, and that's your code, and you get a discount. I think it's 10%, not sure. But anyway, I kind of mentioned their story yesterday, but mainly I stumbled across them, and I'm not even quite sure where. I think it was a year and a half ago, maybe on a Facebook or something having to do with Allison Gingras, which is another one of our contributors. I'm not sure, but I'm putting that together. I don't really quite remember, but I just love them. I love them. So I want to give you one. So you can DM live at breadboxmedia.com. You can email. Have had a couple people already, so that's great, and you will get yours. I think it'll take a couple weeks. They hand make them. There's only a small group of people that do this. The woman started doing it first for the troops. Her son, if he's ever listening, let me tell you, he must be quite the graphic artist, because the website is gorgeous, and he designs the cards and the website and all that. And but they're really handful of people. I think six people is all that works there, as far as I know. And so right around Christmas time, I think they ran out a little bit. So it'll be a couple weeks, but you'll get it. And if you need something to tell you how to say the rosary, then they're all over the place, but I'll send you one too. You just need to say, I don't know how to. One person said, I don't know how to pray the rosary. I just know that it's used for prayer. I don't even think this person was Catholic. So, they have a book there on Rugged Rosary. But there's many abounding. I got one. I've got them all. I mean, I've had them all throughout the years. I've had, the one by, Pope John Paul II. I loved it. I loved the pictures. I loved his reflections. It was a small little pamphlet, and I've since somehow in my moves and travels, I don't have it, at least in my possession right now. So I just remember how much I loved it. And there's the typical one I saw as a kid with the same pictures that I had as a kid. But I found one the other day that I thought was so cool. It was at my church's gift shop, and it's How to Pray the Rosary for Children. And I love it. Now, St. Louis Marie de Montfort is the guy. He's not the one who originally was given the rosary, but he really made this huge devotion to Our Lady. But his little quote is, the rosary is a priceless treasure inspired by God. And it is a priceless treasure. It takes everything that from, if you look at all different kinds of religions and all different kinds of traditions, there's always some kind of something that gets you in a contemplative mood that takes away your mechanical, reactive thought and puts you in a place of contemplation. And with the rosary, we have the mysteries that we contemplate on, but you also have the physical touch, just like any kind of prayer beads that are, I mean, thousands of years people have had prayer beads. In every faith tradition I can think of, there's some kind of prayer bead, something tactile. And I really think that what happens is you get that connection, almost like a circuit, like an electrical circuit that goes from your hands, your brain. People, when they meditate, same thing, but it also, it occupies them. That's why sometimes when you're in the shower, or when you're, there are certain people who create in showers, bathtubs, and driving, even though they're watching the road too, their mind is occupied either with the sound of the water, or it kind of changes your intellectual and analytical thinking moment and puts you in another place. So this is what our rosary does. So it's a really great thing. But the one with the kids, I just love it. Because sometimes, I mean, really, it's not that I don't know how to pray the rosary, but sometimes you just need to be kind of like, okay, no, let's go back to being a kid and just get the nuts and bolts. It's great. So anyway, but I'll be very happy to send you one if you would like that. DM live at breadboxmedia.com. So today I want to talk about mental illness, and I want to talk about what the heck is our Catholic Church doing about mental illness. Now, we have a lot of outlets, a lot of resources, yes, but I think we're in the middle of developing a huge new wave. It's like looking at a storm at sea and seeing its trajectory, seeing where it's going, how it curves, what it's doing, how it's building up power. Mental illness is something that is an ever-evolving reality. It's been with us forever. We see reference of it everywhere, everywhere. I'll give you a story, an anthropological story, of very tiny, tiny tribes, and how a few of them dealt with mental illness hundreds of years ago when people actually studied them, but also certainly for generations and generations and years and years and years before that, when we were way more isolated and people stayed in the same place and put down their traditions for thousands of years. So we've always had mental illness. And at some point, we had these institutions for the severely people with severe mental illness or neurodevelopmental disabilities. They're all thrown in one place. A lot of horrible abuses happened. And we've come out of some of that. We've come into the new age of pharmaceuticals, and pharmaceuticals are thrown at everything because we really don't have a knowledge, a real depth of intuition and understanding of what is real, what is mental illness. It's always been to me from day one, like the color spectrum that you learn as a kid. It's not just fine, huge lines, and this is mental illness, this is not, you have it, you'll never have it. It's the red bleeding into the purple, bleeding into the blue, bleeding into the green, all the little components. Most people will have what is called, what you could diagnose as a mental illness. Most people will experience some form of that in their lifetime. You will. You may not know it. You may resist the thought of it, but you will. And why? Because we have an ever-changing, ever-morphing, ever-going brain and body, and everything, we're nothing separate. We're not brains in jars, although sometimes we feel like it. And we nurture brains in jars. We don't want that. We say, you be a brain in a jar over here. You be no brain and all brawn, and you be an athlete or a dancer or whatever. You then be an artist over here. So we don't have your brawn or your brain, but we have this thing called creativity. And we all know that cliche of an artist is that you cannot be an artist, the starving artist, the suffering artist. Yes, starving, because it's hard to make a living that way. But oftentimes we've known throughout history, just read Vincent van Gogh's biography, or the letters to his brother. There's a book called Dear Theo, I read many decades ago, of Vincent van Gogh and his brother, who he beloved brother, who was more, quote, the normal one, because he owned an art gallery and he was more of the business person. He fit in the world. Well, but you read the letters back and forth, or the actual collection of their letters, and you realize that the being of the creative ones, the people that really create, oftentimes they're just a little on the edges. Jesus, I'm sure in his time, don't hate me. Ooh, you can hate me. Write me about it if you're not happy with what I'm going to say. But I'm sure, well, he was in his own way called crazy or insane or a devil or whatever, because he was called that. We already know that. He's blaspheming. He's this. He's that. Look at him. He's going against all the rules. He's fraternizing with people you're not supposed to. There's reasons we don't do that. All kinds of, he was a revolutionary, but in gentleness and love. So in every kind of way, a lot of people we find out who made huge, huge, huge contributions to our world, not just in art, but in our political world, suffered terribly from mental illness. Abraham Lincoln, horrible depression, Abraham Lincoln. And sometimes that mental illness drives us into productivity. But we're going to talk about that because, again, it's a spectrum from the functional to the non-functional. What's our Catholic Church doing about it? What do you need to do about you? And what is your experience with what we now call mental illness? Well, I'm Dr. Michelle. We will see you on the other side of the break. 573-4BREAD-4.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You are listening to Dr. Michelle Live. We are walking this road together. Now, as the disclaimer says in the beginning of our program, of course, this is my opinion, my experience. I scour the journals, the scientific journals, the popular websites, the crazy social media, the newspapers. Well, so what used to be the newspapers, yeah, the New York Times, and we look at the Huffington Post and everything from the most conservative to the way out there, and on the liberal side, and then the way out there on the someone would consider a conservative side. I look at it all because these are all people. Everybody, unless it was generated by an algorithmic robot, we're all people. So everyone writing has their opinion. My opinions are that I'm giving you are collection. If you are on medication, stay on your medication. Don't just pull yourself off of it. If you want to start wondering whether you can do other things or maybe decrease it, you talk to the person who put you on the medicine. You also have to be wise as serpents, gentle as doves. So be gentle with yourself and your children, your family, but know that you are part of a giant collective that isn't separate from any, it's the whole world. Mental illness abounds everywhere. Do you really think there's going to be a place on earth where there hasn't been a runny nose, or there hasn't been a sore throat, or there hasn't been a broken bone, or there hasn't been a circulation problem? There is not going to be a place on earth. Is there a place on earth where someone's not abandoned, ostracized, lost, or forgotten or killed or no, it's just we are what we are. I one time, and whether they were actually real or not, I've never gone back and researched because I don't remember the name, but I saw a documentary on a group of people that were, quote, discovered, unquote, in, I can't remember, maybe the rainforest somewhere in South America. I really don't remember. Maybe it was in the Philippines. But there was a small group of people who were discovered. And of course, once they were discovered, that changed them forever. So evidently they had, there's only a small band. I mean, there was like 20 people. That was it. That's all there was. But they had no word for hatred or kill. They had no word for it in their language. It just didn't exist as far as toward other human beings. And so that always kind of stuck with me. Now, whether that's an accurate depiction or not, but obviously there was a film crew in there. So, because I saw the documentary, I would guess that, you know, who knows what happened to them or where they are now. But know that you're part of the world. I'm going to read you a few things. We got some ideas from the Huffington Post, some ideas from a more religious point of view, and then some little messages of hope from people who have gone through mental or go through mental illness themselves. But also, let's talk a little bit about some real threats to your mental health having to do with our world of sound bites, perfectionism, social isolation while we're water everywhere and not a drop to drink, where there's you've never been so connected and disconnected at the same time. This talking out of both sides of our mouths as a huge global population of destigmatizing mental illness, being equal with mental illness, and yet at the same time having to be perfect. I'm going to give you an example before we get into some specifics here, because there are some good things. And I want to ask the questions too about our Catholic Church. We have through the every diocese will have some kind of counseling center if you're Catholic. But I will tell you, as I've told many people who ask me throughout the years, I want a Catholic psychiatrist or I want a Christian psychiatrist. There are some or counselor, marriage and family counselor or addictions. There are priests who've gone through addictions and they hold, believe me, it's the resources are out there. But like with all resources, with plumbers, you don't just go and think, okay, well, every plumber is the same. No, some people carry roots. I had one, I don't know if it was a plumber exactly, but some problem. Yeah, he was a plumber. So he went out to the yard and he actually had a little root in a plastic bag he carried around his pocket to tell you that this was invading your, as he did to me, invading your pipes. And but I saw him take it out of his coat from the window in the kitchen. And so I asked him about it, you know. So, you know, you can't rely on everybody. That was a long time ago. But that would have given him a very large job. So the point is that not all plumbers are created equal and not all doctors are created equal and not all artists or mathematicians or accountants are created equal or lawyers or anybody. There are some people who are better than others, better for you. So your personality may work well with one person. It may not work well at all with another. It doesn't mean that you try it once and then it's done. So you stay on the medications and you get whoever helped you or maybe someone of equal education to help you if you want to try to change them or get off of them. Read as much as you can. Go to counseling if you need it. Now, here's my little story. So I have a person coming to me in tears, frustrated, because his wife, he's in tears, because his wife, on the one hand, is completely supportive of him. Talk to me anytime. let's get you into counseling. Let's do this. He was having some really big difficulties, a lot of anxiety, a lot of trauma, and not from war, but a lot of things that occurred in his life that were coming up to the surface for him. And he just found himself like short circuiting and just anxious and unable to really work and really having and getting into depressions. So at the one hand, there's a lot of support there from his wife. But then during times of irritation or anger, the wife would say, "What's wrong with you? You have to go," using it as a weapon against him. "You have to go to counseling. It's not working for you. It's not doing any good. How long are you going to have to go? What's wrong with you that you can't get better?" So we have this disconnect, and we're like that in a society. Oh, let's have all the inclusiveness in the world. But then you're shamed completely. There's something so harsh with that. And it's a constant mind. It's almost like insulting the body and then trying to make it run a marathon. You know, you just can't drink and use heroin and not eat and whatever you can throw at it. And then say, "Well, how come you're not an athlete? You know, what's wrong with you?" We have to open up, and we are on this wellspring of change, but I think it's going to take decades. So for all of you who are bipolar or think you might be, for all of you who are depressed or have been or might be, for all of you who keep crying and crying and crying because you're grieving the loss of a marriage or you're grieving the loss of a death, and someone else seems to dance right through it. You are you. You are an individual. And who you are is who you are. And as I said yesterday, and I want you to look at that podcast, we need to be this side of normal, or maybe a bigger side than normal, because what's normal? What is normal? I don't know. I don't know. Now, on the edges, you can see what's abnormal. Never bathing, wanting to harm yourself, starving yourself to death, driving yourself to death, addictions where you are diving your entire being into a secret world that's only causing you shame and discomfort in the long run, but a desire to continue. These things are not, quote, normal. In other words, there really isn't a real normal part of society we can look at, but the more non-functional you get, the more your life is falling apart, the more you can say, "I need to bring it in, need to bring it in." And then there's this big pool that I'll just go ahead and say is normal, but there is no real normal, because within that pool, are you like the person next to you? Of course you're not. Do you feel down today and not down tomorrow? Do you never feel down? Some people never feel down. That doesn't mean that I'm going to never feel down. There's a whole slew of things that go into what makes a person feel anything. And we're just on we're pioneers. We are pioneers, and we're making a lot of mistakes, just like all pioneers do. They drink from the wrong pond and they end up poisoned. They go on the wrong pass and they end up on Donner's Pass and end up eating each other, you know, and dying on the way. They invade places they shouldn't invade. They try to plant when they don't understand the territory. That's where we all go through. So we're going to give ourselves a little bit of a break here. We're going to take a breath. Know that we're not going to diagnose or treat anybody here. However, I want to give you some ideas on this hope for mental illness. Where does religion play a part in it, or faith? There's lots of evidence to support so much of the importance of the word hope. And I'll tell you how to maybe find a little bit of that on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. You can also email me, DM live at breadboxmedia.com. You can log on to our archive page and see all kinds of things. breadboxmedia.podbean.com. And you scroll over to Dr. Michelle Live, click on that, and you will have your access to many shows. So let me be clear about something. Yes, there are people who, quote, go off the deep end, unquote. It's kind of, you know, obviously not a medical term. There are people who do terrible, terrible things. Are they mentally ill? Well, I mean, you can say yes. You can also say no. Some people decide to do something and they do it and they are very intentional about it. Is that mental illness? It's, we say yes. People have, there's psychopathology that causes people to have no conscience. There's all kinds of hallucinatory or delusional thinking. People have harmed themselves. I've taken care of many a person who has had the delusion, a true delusion, where it's 100%, you can't talk them out of it. It's 100% a reality to them. And I've taken care of many a person who has that, where they are convinced of something that is not real. There is a real, you know, some kinds of forms of stalkers as well. They just have a true delusion. And you can't take that lightly. If they, there are people, I've had priests, consult with me about family members who are from, you know, the very devout, quote, normal, unquote, family, but they go to confession or they hear about a saint who went to confession every day, but the person suffers from scrupulosity. They're in a form of delusional thinking where they cannot go without confession because of they just kind of keep going down this little rabbit hole where they're living in a world of this delusional sin. It's not just imaginary. It's very real. And I've had people who have literally, we hear about that almost as jokes, but truly think that they're part of the CIA or think that they're part of the FBI. And occasionally there is somebody who actually is every once in a while, and they'll walk into a group of people. I had a guy who walked into a group of gang members in one state that I was in. And he just thought he was part of the CIA. And he thought they were part of the CIA. Well, they weren't delusional. They were gang members. They were brutal and they were criminals, but they weren't delusional. And they pistol whipped him with, you know, and they broke several bones in his face, all his teeth. And, you know, the poor guy with that was that. Now that man needs extra help. He needs to be taken care of. He needs to be hospitalized. He needs to be on medications and he needs to be more taken care of than we have in our society right now to help, because we always throw babies out with bathwater. Just again, starting with these kind of extreme situations to illustrate a point that when we had our institutions that supposedly were supposed to be for the caretaking of people who could not make it in society, they could not eat, they could not work, they really had their brains just were malfunctioning to such an extent, or they had developmental disabilities where they could not function out in the world and they became victims, or the family couldn't feed them, and we had our institutions and they became places of brutality, cruelty, sadism. There were also lots of people who got helped as well, but there are just horror stories. I did a paper before I ever thought I would ever go into anything like this, way back when I was in dance and and creative writing, but I did a paper in a college course on institutions for what they called the mentally retarded. And I had access, this is like not online days, this is the books, paper books, big access of all this whole basement of books. And here were some books from like 18 such and such. And I was able to go back and see stories of people. One girl, I remember, just broke my heart that I don't know whether she really had mental illness or not. This was way back in the early days of this country. And she was from Mexico, I think. I'm not quite sure. But I know she did not speak English. And she was put on like a trial at the age of, I don't know, 12 or something or 11. And the evidence that she was mentally ill is that through all the questioning, she giggled a lot. That's what the record said anyway. I wasn't there. It was so far along the path. But she spent her entire life in an institution, her entire life. And when this book was written, this was looking at this institution and seeing this woman who was in her 60s or 70s and going back and study. And whoever wrote the book was studying the records from the early days of how did she even get there? So we have a lot of abuses in our system and they needed to be corrected. But when they got corrected somewhere a few decades ago, they just opened the doors and said, well, we should just integrate everybody in society. Everybody is normal. Everybody's equal. And as human beings, we're all equal. But if you get on my side of the desk and you're there in the middle of the night and people are brought in because they're patched up, given the medications they need to help the biochemistry in their brain, so they're not delusional or hallucinating because they're severely mentally ill, but then they're just put back out on the street. And they're taken advantage of. Their drugs are taken. They're harmed. They're all kinds of things. So it's a very, very broad world. Now, that's what we think of when we think of mental illness. But no, now let's go into our daily life. Depression. Who of you have not had some day of depression? Perhaps a bout with eating disorder or dyslexia. Sometimes that stuff comes and goes. Obsessive compulsive sometimes comes and goes. Sometimes it doesn't. Who are you going to be? Well, we don't know. We don't know which one is going to go on and develop worse. Sometimes people without any, you all know this, sometimes you look and say, there's no indication. How many times do you hear? We had no indication that there was a problem. We had no indication they were delusional. We had no indication they were suicidal. We had no indication. It's a very serious thing. So any of you who have any of that in your family or you yourself, when I talk about it in general terms, I'm not making light of it. It's very serious. Same way as if you had strep throat or anything else that wasn't getting better. Sometimes it'll go away. Your body will just take care of it. Other times it may infect your heart. It may infect your kidneys. It may infect your brain. You have to really, really be cautious and seek out some expert help. We do the best we can. And we're not, obviously, we just keep going up and down. And hopefully as we go from the days of the brutal, where they hosed people down and tied them with bed sheets to beds, we go from that to maybe we go to the opposite extreme. And in the middle, people are getting, not getting treated the way they need to be treated. But now let's talk the next segment. I want to talk about college students. I want to talk about hope. I want to talk about mental illness just in your own daily life. You functional people who have kids or your own children. So we're going to talk about that. I want to look at something from the universities and about some of the studies that they have, that the New York Times about mental illness, the Huffington Post, what some of the churches are doing, because it affects all of us. It really does. It affects all of us. And sometimes we just hear it, but we don't really ingest it or believe it. So I want to make sure that you understand that we all have our issues. And at any given time, you're not weird, sick, or less than, or weak because you need to go to counseling, or you want to check something out, or you just can't take this anymore. And we talked about seasonal affective disorder. People rack themselves with depression and try to, and you put a tag onto, sometimes you get the feeling first and then you look around your environment to find out, well, then it must be my marriage, or it must be this, it must be that. And maybe it's just sunlight. Maybe it's vitamin D. Maybe you're drinking too much caffeine and crashing, or your blood sugar's off. We need to really look at ourselves in a very holistic way. So when we come back from the break, we're going to get into the word of hope and the word of really, this is such an everyday thing. Maybe not all on the edges like we hear about, the extremes I gave you. But we have to understand that there's not necessarily a time limit. You are who you are, and you do what you need to do in your life to live your life to the fullest. So when we come back, we're going to go into that and more things. I am Dr. Michelle. You can email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. You can also call 573-4BREAD-4. We will see you after the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You're walking with me today on Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. Now, in an hour, 40 minutes, whatever we turn out to be on our program, I can't go into, I try, but to go into all of mental illness. It's such a huge spectrum, but let me just give you a couple of words. Pathological pattern. A pathological pattern. So when you are developing a pattern that is leading to a pathology, leading to a problem, that's where you have to wake up. If you feel down, so you feel down. If you feel down for a day, 2 days, 3 days. But if it starts to become a pattern and it's going down, 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 or someone is recognizing that in you, then it's time. It's almost like you wake up, you have a little bit of a head stuffiness and you think, oh, well, allergies, or I didn't sleep well, or the window was open. But then the next day it gets more, and the next day it gets more, and then you get a headache, and there's more, and then you get a headache for 5 days, and you get a headache for 10 days, and then you can't think, and you can't, then you, that's the pattern of pathology. So I want you to think in those terms, the pattern of pathology. Is it just a passing thing? But you can't decide it's passing. You can't look at your child and go, well, that's just being 13. Because if it goes down too far, dips down too far, you have to use everything at your discretion, at the moment that it's needed. We heard about even the elders, the desert fathers in the desert, talking about it's got to be timed right. It's the appropriate time and place to use your discretionary faculties to be able to say, wait a minute, now's the time to step in. This is not just dieting. This is an eating disorder. This is starting to. I'm thinking it might be. I'm feeling it in my gut. I'm feeling it in my bones. And now I'm looking at it. And then someone says something. You follow the clues. So that's really important stuff. So, but what about hope? Okay. So when you look and think about mental illness, it seems daunting, as I'm telling you. You know, it's like it could be anything. But when it comes down to just every day, I get up and I feel down, or I get up and I'm thinking about some past trauma, and I wake up, my eyes open, and I'm already mid-thought thinking about the past trauma or the past loss or some pressing medical problem in my family, something. And I do, and I try to practice what I preach. And so I've begun since last year, I think it was last Lent, or maybe it was the Lent before, when I did a program on waking up and just thanking God. So I do that, even if I'm feeling like, oh my gosh, but I go, wait a minute, I'm not out of bed yet. Thank you, God, for everything in this world, everything in my life, everything that's gotten me here. And then even though I might get up out of bed and feel bad, I still go toward that. The other thing is to recognize patterns in yourself. I've had everybody from Vietnam veterans to housewives say, I didn't know I had a pattern. Like the first time the veteran said that, he goes, wow, we went back and looked at our medical records from 30 years ago in Vietnam. And I look, wow, I did that then. I did that then. I did that then. I did that then. He goes, I had a whole pattern of stuff. I didn't know I had a pattern of anything. That's almost a direct quote, because it was so delightful, but so awesome and so awakening, because it was like, yeah, boy, that's valuable. Let's look at our patterns. That's why sometimes keeping a journal not only is therapeutic, which it is therapeutic, of honest thoughts. And if you're worried someone's going to read it, you have an invasive member of your family or some kind of a cruel person in your family or a friend that you're afraid will use your information as a weapon against you, you can tear it up, burn it, shred it, whatever. But when you write it down, and if you have a record, you can write it down and then you look back and think, I had that dream. I had that same fear-based dream with the same thing back 10 years ago. And I'm still doing the same thing. And you can look at these patterns. So let's look a little bit about the hope. There's an article, and that's why I asked about the way the Catholics, I don't care who you are, Catholics, Muslim, Buddhist, whatever you are, is your group. Do you have what you need? You might have a lot of outlets and counselors, but you do have to look. You don't always have to have one that goes to your faith base. It's who is good. Who do you connect with? Who seems to get it? That's who you need. If you need medication, you need medication. It is not a bad thing at all. It's what you need to do. Thank God we have it. Thank God we have it. Because when you need it, you need it. That's why we can have one or two kids and not have to worry about 20 of them dying, because we have medications. So we use them when we need to use them, but we get in the danger of overusing them. All right, so here. This is from the Huffington Post, and it's from a Christian woman. Christian meaning oftentimes it's like Christians as opposed to Catholics. Well, Catholics are Christian, but more evangelical, I guess. This is a letter from 2016, Hope for Mental Illness. It's a blog, and it was featured on the Huffington Post. This woman, whose name is Kay Warren, she says, when my cancer-stricken elderly father passed away at home with family by his side, I grieved and wept. But my grief was gentle because my dad had lived a very full and rich life. I can tell you the experience of losing my 27-year-old son on April 5th, 2013, to suicide was not at all the same. Matthew, an incredibly funny, kind, compassionate young man whose sweet spirit was encouragement and comfort to many, suffered from severe mental illness. For more than two decades, he struggled. He took his life to end his pain, and he did it in a violent way. Our family is scarred. We were left with not gentle grief, but traumatic grief, guilt, regret, unanswered questions, horror. We are not alone. The statistics are startling. Half of all adults will suffer from mental illness in their lifetime. Half of all chronic mental illness begins by the age of 14. One in five children will have a mental illness by 18. 90% of people who die by suicide also had mental illness. 60 million Americans, that's one in five adults, will experience a mental illness in this coming year. That means every one of us knows someone who is living with a mental illness. Depression, anxiety, schizophrenia, an eating disorder, bipolar disorder, borderline personality disorder, and some additionally have substance abuse. The sad fact is that mental illness system is broken in the U.S. I can't say that strongly enough. It's not that people aren't trying and not that they aren't really wonderful, compassionate people in the field of mental health, but the problem is complicated and most of the attempts to help don't always help. But there's hope for mental illness, and I believe the church can lead the way. When you realize that a large portion of people suffering with mental illness go to either their priest, pastor, or rabbi before they even go to a healthcare professional, it makes equipping faith leaders more urgent than ever. Most are not well equipped, yet clergy are dealing with people with mental issues every day. We have witnessed this firsthand in our own church. At Saddleback Church, there is a higher than average awareness of mental illness and the devastation it can cause. Our pastoral care team reports that 23% of their ministry is to people living with mental illness or their families. Most people understand that mental illness is just that, an illness, and as such often requires medication and treatment by mental health professionals for management and improved health. But the flip side of that realization can lead us to believe that there is nothing significant the faith community can offer to a person with illness. This is a misperception. In reality, the church is tasked with caring for the whole person, body, mind, and soul. And that means we must recognize and care for the person who is afflicted by mental illness. The church can speak into the soul and personhood of the individual in ways the medical professions cannot. The church's central commitment is to be the hands and feet of Jesus. This should include intentionally coming alongside people living with mental illness and supporting their families. If the church lives out its calling in this area, its compassionate voice will rise within the community. That's where we need to look, folks, and the nation and the world, extending an unwavering message of hope and acceptance for those affected by mental illness. So she goes on to talk about the solution of developing a mental health ministry, of really bringing this up to the forefront and bringing this out into the world. And she ends with saying it's time for the church to offer a place of refuge, love, and compassion for those who need it most. It's a time to acknowledge the facts and embrace the millions of people suffering every day from mental illness. So we're going to run out of time here. I want to get into more of this. I think maybe I'll bring it up again tomorrow. But let me just give you some people who actually are mentally ill. There are messages of hope, a couple of them, as we end our program. There's hope, but you have to work for it, one young lady says. It won't be easy, but it will get better, she says. Another one says, there are no right or wrong ways to manage your mental illness. You are not less of a person for needing medication or having to go to therapy multiple times a week. If something helps your mental health, take the time to do it. Don't stop, no matter what other people think. Another one says, things can get better when you say, I need help. You will continue to recover every day when you accept the right help and keep believing in it. So we're going to stop there. You can email me with any comments, questions, or concerns. DM live at redboxmedia.com. We will see you tomorrow. God bless you. This is Dr. Michelle. You've been walking with me on Dr. Michelle Live.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at redboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.